when you are so enamored with being sent off that you come back on the pitch so you can get sent away again. That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Everything time they think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Nick, it's been too nice around here. Things have been played too close to the too cleanly.
The cards have been too close to the chest, and boy, did that change since we spoke last. A spicy rivalry week, shall we say, was had.
Wow. It has been, there was a lot. My particular route into it was for the TFC Montreal debacle.
Yeah.
That unrolled. I guess we should start with some news off the top, and this would be one of them, that at the two sides met in the Canadian Championship quarterfinals.
That's right.
Montreal won. Things are, as we're going to discuss later, not the greatest for Toronto right now. And I guess somebody threw a megaphone at Mark Anthony Kay.
Yeah.
And also and probably slightly more virally, a bunch of supporters. There was a video of Toronto supporters fighting Montreal supporters in the stands.
Yeah.
That with the allegations being that those Toronto supporters essentially charged the away supporter section. As a result, four fans were given permabans for the stadium, which, according to, I believe, the Canadian press, included both incidents. And the Montreal closed their away section for the Montreal Toronto game in the league on the weekend.
Which, not to be outdone, the TFC players was made up for themselves on the pitch. But we'll get to that later. But yeah, heated.
Having stood in both those sections, I would say that the two things that strike me, as you would see in the video, the TFC away section is very far away from the supporter section. So if you wanted to start a problem, you have to hike. You have to go up several sets of stairs.
Yeah.
And, like, you really have to try to get up there if you wanted to cause a problem. Usually the people who, when I've been there, the people who were in the sections next to them are, like, usually more families with their kids and stuff. And as you can see in that video, like, there was a sizable gulf of empty seats. So
And let's be honest, like, you and I have both been to enough soccer games. I don't know if you'll agree with this completely, but, like, the people who fight at matches are the people who are looking for a fight. And they're looking for a fight from the beginning. Whoever's winning or losing or whatever else is happening has no effect on it. These are people that are primarily there to get drunk and start shit. I mean, who knows? Maybe they weren't drunk and they were just starting shit. But
so one question is, how did they get? How are they allowed to get that far? I don't think that these bands answer that question.
Yeah.
The other thing, here was the thing. So that's sort of like the serious, I mean, this is my next point is going to be serious too. The looking at things from a news perspective, as an away fan, I've stood in that section, and what you don't get out of the video is that you have people backed up onto the rail in that video. That is a sheer drop from the top of the stand.
Yeah,
that's what freaked me out, was seeing people essentially off their feet, pressed up against that guardrail. that was a yike. That was yikes to me.
Yeah, gets real dangerous real quick. You don't love to see it.
So that wasn't fun. What's something that's been on your radar?
I think something that's been on my radar is, of course, we had two coach firings. What MLS season is complete without a little pre-mid-season sacking New York Red Bulls?
It's time.
If anything, I was a little surprised. I'm like, really? Have we not fired anyone yet? It's almost June. Red Bulls fired Gerhard Struber. I don't think that was a huge surprise to anyone, probably not even Struber. And then, of course, Chicago Fire also parted ways with Ezra Hendrickson. I felt bad for him here. I thought we were just talking about on previous episodes how he kind of had the Fire playing probably the best soccer they've played in a number of seasons. But if you stack up the results and where they are in the table, I'm like, I can see why they wanted to shake things up sooner rather than later. Which leaves me, of course, asking questions about, should we be worried about Vanny and Bradley now?
I don't think at all it is wrong to look at essentially the fact that to tie the news of these two coaches and the other two coaches that you mentioned with the MLS salaries release. Mm. And the fact that Chicago have the top paid player in Sheridan Shaqiri at $8.1 million. Toronto has Insigne at 7.5 and Bernadeschi in fourth with 6.3.
I hadn't even connected those dots.
And Galaxy and Chicharito is in third at 7.4. Like those are massive numbers. Toronto has 25.74 million in their payroll, and LA Galaxy has 23.46 in their payroll.
Yeah.
You had better believe those teams cannot sit at the bottom of their respective conferences from that long.
No, and like I had noted that as well with the salary release, you know, those top three, Shaqiri, Insigne, and Chicharito, I think it's fair to say all have underperformed quite significantly. Insigne, of course, was injured for a stretch, so that's not totally fair. And they've all had their great moments as well. But, like, it's not just these are our top paid players on our teams. These are significant investments that, at this point, especially this season, you could say aren't really paying off. I'd argue that Chicharito is worth it just for, I mean, probably the sales of merchandise, but also just for the leadership he brings. And I have nothing against Shaqiri or Insigne either. I just think that given what they're getting paid, I noticed Evander's only at $2.2 million. I'm like, that's a way better DP value. and I'm not just saying that because he skunked Vancouver on the weekend. That's part.
Well, I think that totally makes sense. And I think Chicharito got there. I think that Bernadeschi has performed way better than Toronto, but I agree with you that there is a big sort of asterisk around Insigne in terms of like the issues that have gone on and in his ability to be at full fitness and full availability. I think that the with Shaqiri, I never want to be like uninformed about Chicago if I say like, oh, he doesn't matter to the team, because I think he matters to the team, but it is wild to think of the who they brought in this year and like the bigger sort of result. Like, I think who do you see?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think you and I also probably have a similar idea of like, we want value. Is that too much to ask? Like, it's not so much that you wouldn't take any of those three players to be on your team. It's just that if I had $8.1 million to spend, I'm not sure Shaqiri is the player that I'd choose to spend that on, you know? Like, I think he is important to Chicago. I think we saw in the last two games for Chicago, he can be a very influential player. I just think that you can get the exact same production for cheaper. Moneyball is what I'm saying.
Who do you see in the thumbnails for Chicago, whether they've scored or not? To me, it's less often Shaqiri than Kai Kamara. But maybe I'm biased.
Well, to the point, like, if you want value for money, and older players. anyway, so I've got some question marks over some coaches. Normally I'd throw in Peter Vermees, but of course every time we think that Sporting Kansas City suddenly comes back to life and gets, you know, five players back off their injury list, and I think it'll be a frosty day in hell before Peter Vermees goes anywhere. But it does also, like, it puts question marks over everybody, right? Because I think you get into this rhythm with so many games, and things have been inconsistent for a lot of teams. But now seeing, you know, there's ownership and management that are obviously ready to continue the proud tradition of firing their coach, not even halfway through a season. So everybody's on notice.
We have a number of different women's soccer updates. We have the Canada Soccer Members Meeting was held in St. John. I wanted to get involved with it, but I never got any replies to my emails. I wanted to cover it for the Telegraph, but it didn't come up. But partially because there has been massive turnover in the executive office. They've now got Jason DeVos as the I believe the temporary general secretary. They have some other people in some of the executive roles. Charmaine Crooks was elected as CSA president after being the sort of the interim in that role, the former Olympian in athletics. So far, things have been going well. And there are, of course, still lots of questions circling around the organization. So I hope that that her leadership continues to be good. The other big news from that is that Project 8, the Diane Matheson-led Women's League, has gotten official Canada Soccer League status. So
nice.
There was sort of a minute there where things were feeling weird about the fact that they were making so many announcements as they were without being really a part of the Canada Soccer universe at all.
Right.
And it almost felt like CanPL was being frosty towards them. Not that they've made any moves in that direction, but you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
So now they're in the fold. It is good to see the evolution that's been happening on that front. And I hope that they continue to work together well as we are having issues, as we see now in the United States. The USL announced today that it is looking to start the USL Super League for women's teams. They've had the W League for so long. And now they want to basically start another circuit. Okay, all that sounds great. They want it to be Div 1. So they want to compete with NWSL. NWSL has had its own problems. They've got three teams looking for ownership groups right now. They obviously have been continuously rocked by, you know, scandals, but at the same time, I think a lot of people that are looking at this are saying a repeat of the USL NASL nonsense is not, I think, in anyone's best interest.
Yeah. Yeah, like, do you end up just, like, everybody ends up with a diluted product that, like, everybody suffers?
They're saying Carolina, Dallas-Fort Worth, Lexington, Phoenix, Spokane, Tampa Bay, Tucson, and Washington.
Okay.
Are there teams to start playing 2024?
All right.
With the Phoenix Rising group involved in Phoenix, is anybody else worth noting? Charlotte Independence is involved in Carolina. The other big women's soccer news, another set of weird drama that has been circulating for a while in reports and in unconfirmed, you know, discussions. So about 2 years ago, if I'm recalling, maybe a little later, earlier than that, the Lyon women's team, which has Wendy Renard as its captain and used to have Kadisha Buchanan and won the Champions League a lot, bought the Seattle Reign and renamed it to the OL Reign and used it for, with transfer players back and forth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then the American John Texter bought Olympic Lyonnais and for whatever reason is not interested in the women's team. And the rumors is that he was going to sell the women's team to Washington Spirit owner Michelle Kang. And that has been made official today.
Oh.
That Washington is buying the European version of OL Feminine, which right now, as of now, includes the OL Reign. But it's the way that it's working. It's like the women's team is going to be a new company that is related to the corporate owner of Leon, but it's distinct. It's going to own the Leon women's team and the Washington Spirit. And they're going to try and become a city group without having sort of like a shared branding in the same way that Manchester City does, because they want to have those two teams called the same. But as of now, the original company still owns the Reign. So they're going to try and sell the Reign. But I just feel like it's awkward to be like, you know, to have one team benefit from the connection from to OL and then have that be bought out from underneath them.
Yeah, man. Well, if anybody listening is confused, so am I. That's never simple, is it?
Essentially, the idea is that it's like, you know, your friend, you've got a friend. You got a friend overseas, you send them care packages, they send you care packages, and now you realize they're best friends with your bitter rivals. I don't know. That's now you've got to run each other into each other in the hall all the time.
That's going to be uncomfortable.
And in MLS, Colorado has suspended Max Alves, after a Brazilian newspaper reported that he has been involved in a match-fixing investigation with allegations that he took money to take a yellow card in a MLS game in September. People have tracked down what play it was. Apparently, he got subbed on and immediately elbowed Chicharito.
Wow.
Which, you know, talk about taking money. Talk about taking money to do something you would have done anyway.
No kidding. Yeah, there's a lot of people that would do that for free.
Tom Bogert is the one who dug up that footage. Huh. So that's strange. Match fixing is definitely something you don't want, and you've got to stamp out when you see it. It is the most MLS way to do match fixing, I think, is to get paid to take a yellow card.
It totally is, because it's too chaotic and unpredictable to fix it any other way. It's the only thing you can bet money on is somebody elbowing a DP. Oh, lordy. Another kind of like just somewhat strange MLS news. Emmanuel Reynoso is now back with Minnesota United. He has been cleared to play as of today, which is Tuesday. Still very few details about the four-month departure. There's been lots of speculation. I've seen some of the rumors, but I feel like it's not really worth speculating when there's nothing confirmed. Nobody's really saying anything. Given the way that Minnesota has been performing or not as of the last couple of games, it's pretty hard to argue keeping him out of the squad. But to me, like, talk about awkward situations in the hallway. Like, how you manage that, with the team, that's what I'm going to be watching. I don't think it'll be out of reason to see him in a game soon, regardless of his fitness. But, you know, how does that impact the team? What's the chemistry like? Is whatever happened over? Anyway, it's kind of a strange one, but he is now back stateside and with the team and has been cleared to play with the team. And then maybe, I guess, leading us into talking about the games.
One more news before that happens.
Do it.
Of all the things that have dropped today, we're getting a new MLS team.
What?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
The Times of London has reported that San Diego is likely to be announced as MLS's 30th team on Thursday, with the expansion fee to be paid by British Egyptian billionaire Mohamed Mansour, who is the senior treasurer of the United Kingdom's Conservative Party.
Huh. Right. Okay.
So that apparently it will be jointly owned by Mansour and the Sikuan band of the Kumeyaay Nation in the San Diego area, a indigenous American tribe, according to the Times of London.
Okay, and so this is going to be a new San Diego team, not the Loyal.
According in the CBS Soccer report by Chuck Booth, seems to think of them as separate teams. Doesn't okay. seem no, not nothing has been announced because the report is only coming from, you know, the that newspaper. But it would seem no. They are plans to play out of San Diego State University's Snapdragon Stadium, which has about 35,000 seats. Pretty good MLS size.
Great stadium name, too. That beats the hell out of lower.com field.
Yeah, that's
Snapdragon
true.
Snapdragon Stadium. Shoot, I'd go there.
The 30th team has been weird. You know, we thought it was going to be in Sacramento, and then it's not. And we think it's going to be in Vegas, and now it's not. Now it's going to be in San Diego. Well, I'm sure they're happy to get to 29. I'm sure they're happy to get to a nice even number.
Yeah, that also, I mean, I get it. California's big. You've got the market for it. There's a lot of California teams in there. I'm assuming what's going to be the Western Conference. I would hope San Diego plays in the Western Conference.
Yes. You would think. We're looking at 2025. I wonder if a team like St. Louis would be the most recent to start in the West and then get shifted over. I don't know the West has 15. Oh yeah, they play in the West because the East has 15, the West has 14. So they would slot in nicely.
Yeah, yeah. Moving into kind of the storyline off the top, I think it's fair to say that lack of discipline was kind of the order of the day for this latest match week and rivalry week. There were 9 red cards handed out. Certainly a theme that I saw across the games I was watching in the highlights was just needless mass confrontations, not just teams on teams, but crowding of referees on tons and tons of calls, even things that were clear and obvious. Yellow cards, you know, you've got 5 or 6 players swarming the referee, putting hands on them. Clearly, coaches completely lost control over their teams at points. Anyway, and I can back this up because MLS agrees with me, apparently. 21 fines to players and coaches were issued this week, mostly for mass confrontation and failure to leave the field.
Just wild.
One. That's
wild.
Remember, there were midweek games last week, but that was Open Cup. So this is just for the Saturday games plus the one Sunday one.
It's wild. Okay, so we've you know, there have been some pieces coming out this week about the positives and negatives of running all the games at once. We haven't counted, like, what if it's a cursed night and you have everybody play on the same cursed night?
Yeah.
Like what if the vibes are off?
I think the vibes were off. Like, something was in retrograde. which maybe, let's start with Montreal, Toronto. Obviously, you kind of set that up perfectly with the midweek Canadian Championship game that didn't go so well for Toronto on the field or off the field. And then a repeat of that, Montreal came out and hammered Toronto again.
I wanted to say that Vancouver fans often talk about the Canadian Championship weirdness that occurred in the 2009 Canadian Championship when they got eliminated because Montreal played a B-side and Toronto whomped them when Vancouver and Montreal were both in the second division. What people don't remember as well is that Vancouver's next game after that set of Canadian Championship games was against Montreal in Montreal, and Montreal absolutely routed Vancouver. a very emotional Vancouver got equally as beat up. And that seems to have been, in some senses, what has happened here with Toronto, because they went in, they had a pretty rough time. They were the 2 goals. The first one was
Lapalainen.
Lapalainen scores at a tight angle after the ball is played off to him on the wing. Then things start getting strange. Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy has the ball, and Hernan Losada is trying to get him to hand over the ball for the throw-in. And instead, Marshall-Ruddy just slings it over his head into the crowd and immediately picks up a second yellow.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, you do see it with young players of the rush to the of blood to the head. And, like, TFC fans, to be fair, like, this is coming from a fan of Vancouver Whitecaps, and we suffered through Lucas Cavallini. So, like, all's fair in love and war. But, like, it's just such a needless yellow. It's an obvious yellow. It gets given constantly. Like, it's not, like, some brand new rule that came up. It's delaying the game unnecessarily. He kicks the boards as he heads down the tunnel, but it wouldn't be the last that we would see of him.
Oh my God. The positive note you have to make through all of this nonsense that we've been seeing is the goal, the second goal played by Genoso 04.
Yep.
Was great. He did great in both games. He gets the second goal for Montreal in Toronto. It's a flick from... that bounces off of a defender and falls to him. And then at full time, things get wet and wild.
The wet t-shirt contest broke out. And it's what's so crappy about this is, like, you know, you had the bad blood from the midweek game and things obviously not going well between some Toronto supporters and the Toronto players. And, you know, I don't know what Bob Bradley said to fire up his team, but I feel like they misinterpreted the message because they looked quite sluggish and not really great. And I feel like, you know, Montreal got the message to come and play another good soccer game and just got on with it. And not to say there weren't heavy challenges coming in from both sides, but yeah, towards the end, I think Kyoto and Larea, kind of at the center of things get caught up, and there's just lots of pushing and shoving. Then there's punches thrown, and then you've got this, you know, the bench clearing happens. There's lots of pushing and shoving and shirt grabbing. Then Marshall Ruddy comes back onto the pitch and has to be hauled off by the coaching staff.
Somebody is valiantly trying and almost failing to hold him back.
Yeah. And you know, he's tearing away. And I mean, like, this isn't like fake, like, okay, come on, you've had enough. Like, physically manhandling him, trying to pull him off the pitch. Obviously not a great thing to be doing. As a follow-up today, Marshall Ruddy has been suspended an additional match and fined, along with 20 of his colleagues in MLS. It's just, like, there's zero argument, and, like, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because you know it will get punished, but it's, like, it's completely indefensible. And, you know, I get if you're Bob Bradley, you want your team fired up and showing a bit of fight, but again, this is not it. You see Bob Bradley and Losada in a lengthy conversation as all of this is unfolding that looks, for the most part, respectful. But, you know, watching Bob Bradley's post-game press conference just seemed to shrug it all off. And I get that as a coach, you're protecting your team and whatever. But I thought this was one of the least professional performances I've seen from a Toronto FC side. And that's saying a lot.
There were some unprofessional times.
And there were some real unprofessional times. This, for me, has to feel like a very low, low for TFC.
Clearly something around this revolved around Losada, because I feel that if you're watching the replay of how it all starts, Larea is saying something to Losada or staring him down. And then Kyoto sort of hits the scene and shoulder bumps into him to just, like, you know, move him out, get his attention or what have you. Of course, if nobody should be punching a game of soccer.
No.
So that doesn't, you know, justify whatever happened there afterwards with him. But what bothered me the most was that, like, that they things are roiling. People are a player has re-entered the pitch. People are being held back on both sides. People are circling around to beak at people that are being held back, and that makes them struggle more. And Bob Bradley is got his back turned to all of it and is choosing to upbraid Hernan Losada as his players are completely lost control. I don't get that. To me, that's a failure of leadership.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that given how we opened the show and talking about the firings, I feel like, you know, the ownership group has to take a look at that too and go, like, again, yeah, you want some grit and some fight to your team, but, you know, they played a shitty game of soccer. They got called on, you know, they got the cards they deserved, as did Montreal. And it's just, it's all indefensible. And I feel like the lack of attrition on Bob Bradley's part afterwards, too. I mean, Larea has no business getting into the scrapping as well. And we know that his temper can flare. And it again, just picking up needless things. And I think Larea was lucky not to be suspended for his role in things. And he was fined as well. But yeah, it's just, it's silly. And if I'm trying to think objectively about TFC here, is you want to see them putting a cohesive product together on the pitch. And in a, you know, we know that they have a lengthy list of injuries, and Bradley's tried all kinds of different configurations to get a somewhat decent team together, and he's acknowledged like it's going to continue to be difficult with the personnel, but that's when you need to be sharp and to be focused, and most importantly, on the fucking field when you're supposed to be. And now Marshall Rudy's out for the next two matches when Toronto is desperate for points. I think he's a really good player. Well, you can't be a really good player if you aren't available to play, you know?
It's bad. It's a bad,
and again, bad beat. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. That's the bad beat.
I was just going to say, to be fair to Toronto, a lot of other teams had similar issues this weekend, so.
Seems like it. Do you want to talk about Colorado, Philadelphia? Because that seemed like a real barn burner.
Yeah, let's go there.
So this is you start with a foul against foul against a Colorado player, which leads them to get a penalty to take the lead. Kai Wagner scores at the outside the area, rips it. Corey Mbizo cut back to Julian Carranza, who's wide open at the top of the box, also rips it. Now it's 2-1. Kevin Cabral clips Andre Blake's head a little bit.
Yeah.
With that, like he there's sort of like a trip, and he's got him on the top of the head. This is one I don't want to be. I'm not a macho guy. I don't. I'm not, you know, when it comes to this, like, you know, the sport of hockey, like, you have to, all this is a part of the game. I would say in terms of like, I would now turn to the devil's advocate that when Barrios shoved Andre Blake head first into the boards, I don't think that that's unreasonable for Blake's teammates to show up and immediately say, hey, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that... sorry. Getting choked up here about it. No. I agree. I think that, like, players coming to the defense of their teammates is one thing. There's points where... I forget who, but there's a player who, like, rugby tackles a player down to the ground. That player was also fined. But for me, again, it's just that things boil over so quickly into like an actual altercation. Because the shove that it's a cheap shove from Barrios, but it's also the kind of shit you expect to see in a rivalry game. And I don't know that I necessarily call these two teams like vicious rivals. They might be now. But I agree. I think that, you know, you can expect that there's going to be some reprimanding for your actions. I was just going to say that the thing that got me in this one is when you get players who are getting red cards after a mass confrontation like that, and they turn around and they're screaming in the ref's face. I think you got to stamp that shit out. I mean, Galvan has no business putting his hands on the referee, screaming at him like that. Like, no. I know that referees take a lot of heat from players and there's the heat of the moment and whatever, but I feel like that's got to be multi-game bans to just stamp it out. It needlessly delays the end of the game. It's a completely pointless exercise. You've been shown red, get off the pitch. There doesn't need to be any other discussion. If there is, VAR will look at it. But you're,
like you said, it's because they're allowed to do it. They feel they're allowed to do it or entitled to do it.
Yeah. So
I was going to say that first, I'm almost sad that these are two teams in separate conferences because this would be a really spicy first round playoff game. The thing I did want to add, just because I feel like it's important to point out, with the I would say that I take the, I'm surprised that Berrios never got more than yellow for that, because I think that I take the initial hit on Blake a little, like, quite seriously. Again, thinking in hockey terms, that can really seriously injure someone.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because of the impact of like a push like that on another part of the field wouldn't have been as much of a problem, but I think that that has to be treated as serious foul play, and I was surprised that he did not come in for a retroactive upgrade of a card or an additional suspension or anything.
Yeah, no, that was surprising. Colorado violated mass confrontation policy for the second time this season, so the organization head coach Robin Fraser have been fined. Philadelphia goalkeeper Andre Blake, defender Damian Lowe, Colorado goalkeeper William Yarbrough, midfielder Brian Acosta, and forward Diego Rubio have all been also fined for just that incident. So, good times. Everybody's a little lighter in the pocketbook afterwards. Philadelphia, on the soccer side of things, able to get the business done and the 3 points.
I didn't see as much. There was another one, mass confrontation in the Chicago-St. Louis game, where Chicago won that. Nelson got a second yellow for coming in studs up on Gutierrez. Yeah. I didn't quite see where the dust up was, but that seemed like that was the other mass confrontation.
Yeah.
Fine fest.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I did think St. Louis had some really bad fouls throughout the game. And I think that's what some folks in the Chicago outfit took umbrage with. A lot of these teams, I also think this didn't necessarily help. A lot of these teams played each other in U.S. Open Cup. And this was a repeat for Chicago. I think they beat St. Louis twice in a row, if I have that correct. My major note of this game was raggedy ass fire beat and even more ragged St. Louis. The lone goal came from Zichos, who subs on and almost immediately scored. I was kind of taking a look at the midweek games to see what the starting lineups looked like. And it looked like St. Louis started with their full starting 11 in U.S. Open Cup. That's right. And they also lost that game to Chicago. And I noticed it's not a perfect trend, but the teams that went with kind of the mixed lineup of like some starters and some reserves seemed to fare a little better on the weekend. Versus the teams that decided to just pour everything into U.S. Open Cup for whatever reason, that played their full starting lineups, didn't necessarily win those games or their weekend games.
Take note with midweek league games coming up this week.
That's right.
I was going to say that the other sort of like weirdly spicy one was Houston-Seattle, which had a truly horrendous color combination. I don't know why it
I did not think that. I did not think the truly horrible thing was going to be followed up by the color clash. But was that the mass confrontation you were referring to?
That was the confrontation. That's a real confrontation that I have problems with.
Stamp it out.
This is a stamp it out like the Houston player Bossy, who stomps on Lodeiro while trying to change direction.
Can't do that.
He gets red. It kind of like there's an argument. What there's an argument to be made while watching the slow motion of this, that like he didn't. That maybe the motion was like in some ways innocent in the sense of like, oh well, he doesn't really know who's behind him. He's just putting his foot down. But he does make contact way too high up for him to make contact.
Yeah, studs up that high on a leg. That's I mean. It's a yellow at least.
knowing that there was a second yellow in this game, but not knowing to whom, watching the highlights, you see three guys in a row pick up yellow cards, and it's just like, which one will it be? Will it be Herrero getting yellow for yelling at the referee? Will it be Lodeiro for shoving somebody after trying to get the ball from him for a free kick?
Yeah, directly in front of the referee. Yeah. And it was indeed Hector Herrera who joined his teammate Bassi in the 78th minute. Interestingly, Herrera also leads MLS with two red cards.
Both of them...
I was just going to add to that like the notable thing there for me is that's your DP, man. You pay players big bucks to play games, not get sent off. That's two. That doesn't look great. And that's coming from a fan who knows.
And both Herrera and Bossy, Amine Bossy, were fined for failing to leave the field.
Yeah. Just like, what are you arguing about? Like, when has a referee ever been like, oh, wait, you know what? I'm sorry. I take it back. Come back here. I know it's happened in MLS, but again, there's other checks that need to happen. Rothrock, the not a DP, but an important player for Seattle now, got the lone goal for Seattle. A somewhat younger-looking Sounders, just a sloppy and undisciplined Houston. It felt like Houston probably could have come away with a point, but just really seemed to struggle with the speed of Seattle, and hence the fouls and the lack of discipline. Didn't look like a great game plan going in, so Seattle back in the winning column. One game that I thought was notable, which on the face of it you'd sort of think Sporting Kansas City and Minnesota United might be a heated one with more cards, but it was actually a sort of polite Midwestern affair. Sporting
after 10 losses, Sporting Kansas City were certainly interested in getting themselves a little something.
That's right. They also were able to win their midweek U.S. Open Cup game, and I think that gave them a boost. Rosero, Shalloway, and Garikinda, who is back now, all scored. Yeah, Minnesota, who've been like not so bad, obviously struggling in the goal scoring department, but defensively been okay. Just really cannot clear their box properly in this game. Almost everything they try to clear just goes straight up and lands to a Sporting Kansas City player. Tim Melia bowls over Sungbin, but then Sungbin takes the penalty really poorly. Melia also went out injured. That was my other note from this game. I haven't heard an update there.
Out for the game on Wednesday with a quad injury.
But that's not great. I thought St. Clair here looked really shaky in this game. He's off his line on the last goal, and it just gets chipped. Kinda just chips it over him. And Adrian Heath kind of agrees as much. He just says it's like, we just made some horrible mistakes, and yep. That's what you can expect to happen.
St. Clair is such a developing in such an interesting way in terms of like simultaneously he does look like an amazing future for the Canadian men's national team and as a goalkeeper, and he's getting a lot of time to develop in Minnesota. that is giving him that's like generating positive and negative highlights. You know what I mean? Like, it's got, like a combination of, like I still feel positively, but,
oh, yeah.
You know, you have games where people are like, oh my God, it was so bad from him.
And like,
and then you have games where it's like, oh my God, he made an amazing save and totally saved the game.
Yeah, all great keepers have not so great games, and I definitely don't put this loss squarely on his shoulders, but it sort of stood out as like an uncharacteristic performance from him of just getting caught in no man's land, just looking a bit indecisive at times. So it's not to be for them.
You had, in Miami's game against New England, you had David Ruiz scoring on 6 minutes and then getting sent off because of a second yellow. With a fine coming as well for situation embellishment. There was a little coming together and he fell to the ground with his hands on his face, and the referees decided that it was not enough.
I think he was actually the player too that technically should have been getting 3 yellow cards, but the second one was given to a different player. And I didn't see that in any reports of them having reversed that. So that's one I feel like it's really hard to argue against, is when you already should have been off, and then you get the second, is like, that's, yeah, what's your defense there?
That's something I haven't heard of, like, since, like, what, the 2010 World Cup?
Yeah. Or
2006 World Cup, is that when they gave out multiple cards?
Yeah, I only saw it on the highlights, so I didn't see the full run of play and exactly what happened. It was
on the highlights. It looked to me as though they were accounting, as though he was given the yellow. The yellow was given to somebody else, but he was being sent off for it. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I will have to more research needed.
Forgive us, folks. There was kind of a lot of cards given this week.
There was a lot of cards given this week.
Joseph Martinez scored his second straight with the Herons. And I got to say, like, seeing the highlights at least, you know, having Kamal Miller on one side, DeAndre Yedlin on the other, feeding crosses into the box for Martinez to mop up, like, not the worst approach.
Past the mark of the fastest to 100 goals in MLS history.
Yeah, and it was Lassick, all of a sudden, like, all the question marks over him, and all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, there's Joseph. There he is, just picking off New England like it's his day job.
Which he's kind of in his Messi and PSG era, where it's like, ah, it doesn't really matter. Every time he scores, it's like, oh, isn't it so nice to see him?
Absolutely. Another, maybe that leads into his former club, and speaking of former clubs, Justin Merrim gets two very respectful goals against his old club. Charlotte overtook Atlanta 3-1.
We love to see a respectful boy.
You love to see a respectful boy. He almost looks apologetic on his first goal. He's completely unmarked at the far post and immediately, like, sort of covers his heart and looks at the audience. And I swear, like, you can almost see the word sorry leave his lips. Like, he did say after the game, like, I thought it was great to say. He's like, you know, Atlanta took me at a very difficult time in my career, and I've got nothing but respect and love, and it was very obvious. But it was just kind of, like, funny as well.
I'm like,
you could do a fist pump. Like, they're not going to disown you for it. But obviously, he wanted to be respectful.
I'm usually not somebody in sports that's, like, anti-celebrations. Or, like, the things that it's classless to celebrate a lot. You should act like you've been there before. No, soccer is about joy. You should be joyful. But I find it sweet. I find it just like a nice, it's nice to know that the fans and the player have a relationship that continues after, you know, their particular time with that club has ended.
It's nice to know that occasionally, like, that relationship supersedes the other thing, right? And I agree. It doesn't have to happen all the time. What else in that one? There's a penalty. Guy getting hauled down by a shirt. Swiderski scored that penalty.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No. And then in the dying minutes of the game, Atlanta decides to play. And a late corner sees them get a few half chances and also score. So
commentary tries to play that like it's a thing. Like, oh my God, there's a glimmer of hope now. No, there isn't.
Yeah, there's like maybe 30 seconds left. But, you know, I'll say this. Atlanta fans, you show up because people celebrated that damn goal like they'd won the game. And I don't know if it was just the elation of the moment, but I was like, good for you. If you're right, soccer is about joy. Your team scored a goal. Why the hell not? Or maybe they were also just thinking like that tied it because Justin Merrim had scored two. So in their head, it was maybe a Atlanta win. But
carry the one. Columbus, there were also late game hoorays in Columbus, but not by Columbus fans, as Orlando drew 2-2.
Yep.
You had a devilish first goal with the pass, the Cucho pass across the goal is just like basically Darlington Nagby has to do nothing to score that.
One of the easier ones. Yeah, in a run of a game where like Columbus score two and then Orlando score two, I kind of feel like it's a real split the difference draw, that's probably a fair result. And both of these teams I just cannot figure out this season. You know, Wilfred Nancy, obviously we love him here. I think he's done good with Columbus, but I just feel like I can't really tell you all that much about Columbus this season. And Orlando, it's like sometimes they show up and they're there, sometimes they're not at all there. This was kind of both in the same game. They get the point, but I don't know that I really learned much more about either of these teams through this game.
Both of them pretty good. If there was another 5 minutes on the game, Columbus might have scored, but there wasn't, so too bad for them. Another game that sports entertained me this week was LA Galaxy versus San Jose, which featured about 1,100 Chicharito chances.
Yeah. This was a leggy one too. There were a lot of starters for LA Galaxy that also played the Open Cup game. Again, I'm not sure that's the way to play it, but I also understand from Vanny's perspective, you're trying to get a rhythm together. You're trying to find a way to win games, so it's maybe better. I heard one of the announcers say, like, as a former player, she sort of preferred, like, Wednesday is usually the hardest training day, so playing a game is like you get the intensity of that training session without actually having to do the training session. But the LA Galaxy players did not look necessarily up to it for some parts of it. However, it turned out okay for them.
Turned out okay. Good. They are definitely a group that needed a win. In Austin.
I just had one note there. Jovalich comes on for Chicharito and almost immediately strips Jonathan Mensah.
Oh my God.
And scores a pretty sensational goal. San Jose maybe scored a goal at the death, but the arguments were there that it was offside, and then the whistle goes anyway, so they just decide not to review it. And then maybe just a final point to set us up for talking about the Whitecaps later. I feel like a Galaxy side, and by no means are they out of the woods, but teams like Kansas City and LA all of a sudden winning games and climbing up the table even a little bit, it's got to worry the Vancouver Whitecaps a little bit. This is why you got to win your games, because you cannot just bank on your enemies losing theirs.
That is true. That's a concerning, it's a concerning note. In Austin, Rodney Redes picks up two yellow cards in a span of less than 10 minutes and, with the second one being on a late challenge and say it with me is fined for refusing to leave the field on time.
Man, what the beach day fund for MLS has got big, got fat this weekend. There's going to be a new espresso machine in that central VAR booth. That's all I'm saying.
Austin's holds on until late in the game, but Jesus Ferreira scores on 89th minute.
Yeah, great.
One-on-one
great
with Stuver.
Great pass behind the defenders. Ferreira, like, yeah, he's sort of like Chicharito, right? He's going to have all these chances in a game, but he'll find an opportunity to score one. And he did.
Portland hosted Vancouver, and as noted, just one of those from the off where it's like, it's going to be one of these, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Good midweek performance against York United. I think that was like a 4-1 win for them or something.
That's correct.
But boy, Vancouver just looked like they had lead in their boots until like the final 10 minutes. But yeah, injury-riddled Timbers no more. Evander just carved us up. That goal where he takes the pass and just turns and shoots and scores, you're like, well, if we're going to be doing that, then
yeah. Yeah, then that's pretty much it. It's kind of like Vancouver gets the own goal, and it's like, even though it's an own goal, it's like, hey, we generated something. That's fun. And then, you know, gets less fun.
It gets less fun. Yeah, just mistakes and lack of creativity bury them pretty early, and they struggle to get back into it. I always have this concern, but the Whitecaps just cannot win their rival games. And I'm not trying to, like, over-milk the rivalry week thing. It's just frustrating, right? Like, it's you just want to see your team come to these matches and perform at a certain level. And it wasn't for lack of trying, but they just looked really outclassed for much of it. In a game where it felt like they should be able to go to Portland and get a point, especially the way that things have gone for the Timbers, but take nothing away from them. Like, Savarese's always seems to be able to pull the rabbit out of the hat with them and inspire them to greater things. And given all the injuries and some of the draws and the losses, you know, they're sitting sixth on the table and Evander's doing his thing. So, good for Portland, not so good for Vancouver. We played Dallas on Wednesday and then Seattle on Saturday. I don't feel awesome about those two matches, speaking of not being able to beat our rivals.
You do play most of your games against them, so you better do them good. New York Red Bulls gets that new manager bump with a 1-0 win against New York City. Fernandez scores on 76th minute, is in the right place to catch a defensive clearance.
Yeah, that'll do it. Some chances from New York City, but just everybody looking a little bit not on the same page. And as you say, the Red Bulls, the headless Red Bulls get their win. And
they've done the pick. They've put their assistant, Troy Lesesny, in for the whole season. So they're not headless in the sense that whatever they're going to do, they're going to do in the winter.
They got the Vanny treatment. Just get the next guy up and then just go all in. And then I think the last one we're missing here is RSL got just utterly humiliated by LAFC. Bouanga scored again.
Boom.
And I would say there were no Real surprises here in this
No
game.
Real surprises. The penalty's a little soft. Bouanga gets a little shove with a forearm. That's fine.
Yeah. He's now leading the Golden Boot race with 9 goals. I think this is like 4 or 5 games. It must be 5 games now straight that he's scored.
Doing good.
Yeah. Hard to argue with, right? Speaking of production, man. There is one more game. Nashville game. A 1-1 draw.
Very funny goal here with Hani Mukhtar rebound. Goes out wide. Sent back in. Bounces off the goalkeeper's hands off of an attacker and in.
Sometimes the chaos will bounce your way.
Another goal for Coup Di Pietro for DC in response.
Yeah. Not maybe the most notable game of the weekend, but the asterisk beside this game, I think, is that, like, obviously, the thing that Rooney can instill in a team, if nothing else, is just buying into a common idea. And all of a sudden, you know, a DC team that looks like definitely still work in progress believes that they can go toe-to-toe with the best. Nashville are one of the best, certainly defensively. And DC is no longer free points to teams. And that's significant. Like, this DC United was garbage for, like, 3 or 4 seasons. It's been
That's right.
Bad news bears for DC United across the board. So are they lighting up the Eastern Conference? Yeah, not exactly. But they are above the playoff line for the first time in, I think, 100 years. And they played a good game of soccer against a really good soccer team. Got something out of it. So it's, yeah, I'm not necessarily all in on DC United right now, but I think that maybe worth taking a closer look at, and it'll be interesting to see as the season develops and maybe they add some players in the summer, find the right starting 11, could be causing some real problems for some of the teams below them in the East that are struggling. Because again, we talk about needing to win your games so that when other teams who have been bad suddenly get good, you can make up that ground. But if DC United is going to all of a sudden be playing well and difficult to get points off of, if you're a team like New York City, maybe even Orlando, Charlotte, it starts to make you wonder, like, can we actually do the business and unseat some of these teams if some of the better teams are the teams that we've traditionally been able to get points off of?
It's just, I mean, I'm not necessarily, you know, hailing this playoff format, but it's certainly going to be, even with more spots, it's certainly going to be a challenging time.
Yeah, you got 9 chances, and still it's still going to be tight for a lot of teams. I think that's it. I think that takes us up to current things. I think folks will probably be listening to this on Wednesday, so there'll be more games happening, and then, of course, the Saturday games as well. But, you know, table's starting to take a little bit of shape, and blows being traded everywhere. we'll keep an eye. Yeah, up to date on the discipline situation. Whew, it's a lot.
That's right. There's going to be, we're going to get another one of these teams next year too. Jeez. Until San Diego joins the league, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS on Instagram. You can also find this show on MLS Soccer. Wait, no, that's not right. Not on MLSsoccer.com at thatsomls.com.
That's right.
And on Apple Podcasts, wherever else you get your podcasts, please rate, review, and subscribe. Where can we find you?
You can find me online on Twitter at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. Thank you, as always, for listening, reviewing, subscribing, telling your friends, and hang out and watching soccer with us.
Yeah. And until next time, if you do get sent off, just stay off the field. Don't get sent off. But if you do, it's a message from the universe. Stay off.
Go home.